good day and good evening. Hello, friends and listeners. Thanks for tuning in today. I hope you had a good weekend and that you're enjoying the run-up here to Christmas 2013. My name is Henrik, and we're based out of the west coast of Sweden. We cover a lot of different subjects, and you can find more of what we do at redicecreations.com. Radio, videos, news, and much more. Well, today we have a somewhat different program for you guys. As you might recall, if you're a regular listener, we like to examine our own country and help to bring issues to the table that shows you the flip side, the shadow world, if you will, of what actually goes on in Sweden. Especially since so many people around the world unfortunately seem to think that the country is in some way an example to live up to. Egalitarian, human rights at the forefront, you know, that things are fair, and hardly any corruption. Of course, this is all an illusion, and we do like to point this out. So the story we're going to hear about today is that of Lisa Andersson, our guest, and her husband, Micke Brandt, who runs a construction company in Sweden. They were accused a couple of years ago now by the tax authorities to have collaborated with other companies that had not paid their taxes. So in the process, Lisa and her husband found out that when dealing with the authorities and courts in Sweden, one has almost no rights. And they realized that before the state and the state courts, their words and witnesses were less valid than the quote-unquote evidence or presumptions that the authorities presented. So struggling not to go bankrupt, they now have a long way to go to get their business back up on its feet, to get out of debt, and to basically reset things to how they were before these false accusations and attacks began. In Sweden, you see, people serve the state, not the other way around. And this is an example of how awfully wrong things can go when this is the case. There are more and more examples of corruption and mistreatment being highlighted behind the headline news in Sweden as more and more people are talking about their experiences. They dare, for once, to be vocal in the online press, and the cases are turning out to be more and more nasty and far more frequent than first thought. Ultimately, it's more costly for the people as well. But as for the state, they are almost close to all-powerful and there is no accountability, and they seem to have a free rein to act as they will, as they create more rules and restrictions that slowly is shutting down businesses, especially small businesses, despite the politicians talking fondly of them. Most Swedish men and women work hard to make ends meet and are paying one of the world's highest taxes. And yet the services that they are supposed to be offered are not only getting fewer and fewer, but the quality of those services are dwindling as well. So this is just one case, but we've highlighted others in the past, and it is an insight into the treatment of both the individual, but also towards the smaller business owner in Sweden. And if you have a distant admiration, a fondness of sorts of this country, I suspect that you'll be interested in hearing more about this case. Well, hi, Lisa. Welcome to Red Ice Radio. Great to talk to you today. How's it going? Everything okay?
Everything is just fine. It is, finally, you say.
Exactly. Well, this is a very interesting story. We've been, you and me have been talking quite a bit over email about your story in the last, a couple of months, I believe, actually. And basically what has happened to you and your husband in regards to the Swedish tax authorities and everything else. And of course, I wanted to bring you on because I wanted our audience to get a chance to see or hear about a case that kind of is a little bit on the inside, if you will, an actual case of how an individual, a family really in the extension, have been treated in terms of the authorities and everything else. And for obvious reasons that our audience will understand, we've been focusing on Sweden and the system because it's continually praised within the international media, etc., within politics and everything else. So we wanted to try to understand a little bit how is it really on the inside, if you will. So please back up a little bit, Lisa, and tell us about your story and what has happened to you, and just, you know, take your time and whatever you feel that you need to explain for our audience. And we're not going to assume that they know anything about the system or anything per se. So please just go ahead and tell us what happened to you, Lisa.
Yeah, well, first of all, I just want to thank you very much for all the programs that you're doing. I really appreciate what you're doing at Red Ice Radio.
Thanks.
My husband and I, we started a construction company a few years back, 2005, I believe. And we have some employees and really, really good workers. We'd been working a couple of years. And I don't really know where I should begin with all this, but I'll go back and forth a bit.
Sure, take your time. No worries.
Okay. So anyway, when we'd been having this company for a couple of years, we decided to move to Stockholm. We're living now in the middle of Sweden, in Hälsingland. We moved up from Stockholm 2004, and then we started a construction company. And my husband works mostly in Stockholm, so he'd been a bit tired when he comes home in the weekends. I asked him eventually, maybe you should work a bit more up here in Hälsingland than, you know, working in Stockholm all the time. But, you know, he was very proud of his company and he had all the work done in Stockholm. So he said, okay, let's try and live in Stockholm for a while. I did just want to take a background, you know, because it's sort of the problems with our company started a bit before our tax authorities attacked us.
Right, yep.
Just to give a picture of where it all started.
Right.
So my parents has a house in Stockholm, and when we moved up here, we sold our house in Stockholm. And when you have sold your house in Stockholm and used all the money, you know, to start a construction company and all that, it's very costly to buy, you know, move back to Stockholm and buy a house and all that.
So, yeah.
My parents have a house in Stockholm, and we decided to make two apartments of that house. So we had somewhere to stay. So we decided to, you know, let's move to Stockholm, and you know, see how that works out. So we did, we didn't really like it there. We found a really good school, we thought, for our children. But they never liked it in Stockholm, so they wanted to go back to Hälsingland. And when we lived in Stockholm, we were working for this other construction company. They were building houses, and we had made some work for them for a couple of months. And they wouldn't pay the invoices we had sent them. So they finally went bankrupt, so we lost a lot of money. And when we had moved to Stockholm, the house or the apartment where we were going to live, it wasn't complete. So we had taken a loan of ½ a million kroner to do the bathroom and, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
So
yep.
We didn't have the money to complete that. It all went into the company to save it, and we managed to save it. But, you know, that's just to sort of give a background that when something happens, when another company doesn't pay the invoices and goes bankrupt, you don't get any help. It's sort of if you're a company owner in Sweden, you just have to it's your own fault, really, you know.
Right. Yeah.
So there's no, you don't get any help. You pay lots of taxes, but when something like that happens, it's just, you know, tough shit. So we decided to save the company, and we had just bought these diggers and machines, you know. We had invested in that. So
right.
That sort of made, you know, we were able to pull this through if we put in some money. That sort of started it all, and we were very fed up with Stockholm, and it was quite tough there because both my parents got cancer during this time, and as we didn't have even, you know, a toilet to use in our apartment, we had to use their bathroom and shower and everything. It was, you know, we didn't want to stay there anyway, and our children wanted to go back to Hälsingland and their friends here and everything. So it was just, you know, okay, we'll leave Stockholm, we'll go back to Hälsingland, we have a shower, and we have a water closet and everything.
Yeah.
The week after we moved back to Hälsingland, the tax authorities, I don't know if they sent me a letter or if they called me. I think they sent me a letter and then I called them. And then they say that they wanted to make, you know, to check and see that we have are paying the taxes and if our company is in order. They I don't know if it's called a tax audit or something like that, that they check.
That's right.
To see if everything is okay.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, you know, it's never fun to go through something like that. But I wasn't, you know, really scared of anything. I was just thinking, okay, so many things have been happening. This is going to take some time and all that. But, you know, it's just a bit annoying, but whatever. So they wanted all our bookkeepings. So we collected all our binders with all the bookkeepings, and then we sent them into the tax authorities. And then I don't know how long it took. Yeah, and then they also wanted to talk with us to talk about our company. And so we decided that Micke, my husband, would go, and that he would bring Karin, the woman that does our bookings and bookkeepings. So they went down to Stockholm. I was staying at home because, you know, my children and we've got a dog and a cat and, you know, lots of animals up here.
Sure, yeah.
So they went down there to talk to them. And they have this office in Stockholm somewhere. They were from Linköping. And they thought that we were still living in Stockholm. Sometimes I think that they might not have done this if we weren't living in Stockholm. We just, you know, moved back to Hälsingland. But I think
this is a local deal, if you will.
Well, I think it's easier for them to pull something like this off if you're just sort of in Stockholm. It's a bit more anonymous and stuff like this. In here in Hälsingland, everyone knows everyone. But I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, they went down there and it was all very intimidating for them. They were picked up in the foyer and then they were let into this room where there were no windows. And when they closed the door behind them, the door didn't have a door handle. So Mikko was thinking, you know, should I have brought my toothbrush with me? Maybe, wow. Where's this going to end? And they let themselves in through another door, and then there was this table between them. And then they started to, you know, ask questions about the business, and they had this, you know, this paper with lots of questions with that they were asking.
Yeah.
And
if I just ask a little bit more about that, how is that kind of situation? Did they like? They gave you a time basically that you guys had to show up on that time, or was there any kind of, is it all on, they just basically make the demands and you're to obey those? Is that the deal here kind of thing?
Kind of, but I mean, I've heard of other companies that they've come with guns and stuff like that, you know, so you wouldn't have time to cheat with something, you know, so they didn't act like that with us. They just asked us to send in the binders. And I mean, of course we could have, you know, checked some things out, you know, and all that. But I mean, we have this woman that does all the bookkeepings and we really trust her and she's really, you know, very So but I mean of course it's they decide.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, yeah. So what happened was the result of this meeting?
Well, the result of it was, I just have to explain a bit more, because they asked him. Finally, they asked him, you know, what other companies have you hired during this year? Yeah, they were checking the year of 2009, just the year before. This was in 2010 in February, I believe, that they called for this meeting. So they wanted all the bookkeepings for 2009. So, and then they had asked us, you know, what companies have you hired? And my husband didn't respond, you know, just straight away, just like this, starting to tell them about all the companies that we'd hired. I mean, we hired lots of companies. We have plumbers and electricians and everything like that. It's like if I ask you, you know, what did you eat for breakfast last night, last morning? You don't just, you know, start telling you. You think a bit. And maybe he was, you know, thinking for a few, you know, 15 seconds or something like that. And he was thinking, well, why are they asking this? And then they put forward some of the companies that we'd hired. I mean, it's all in the bookkeeping. So then Mika said, yeah, of course. And this one and that one, you know. And they asked a bit about some names, and Mika wasn't really sure about some surname. And that those two things they have used against us as sort of evidence that we are guilty.
Really?
of the things that they later accused us for.
Right.
The thing is, to explain to someone that doesn't really understand, in Sweden, when you have a company, you go to the tax authorities and they give you something called F-skatt.
Right.
That is sort of a company tax that you are approved to
do business basically with other companies. Yeah,
exactly. And I don't know when they decided to use this, or where they built the system, but it's a couple of years back. So when you call the tax authorities and you say, we want to hire this other company to do some work for us, then they'll say, okay, it's all fine. You just check and see if they have this F-tax. And then everything is just fine. And we did that, and they had this F-tax. And we thought, okay, so we had hired also workers to do some work for us. Because as we had this company that went bankrupt, we really needed the money. So we had hired a company and workers, and maybe, you know, we could make a few 10 or 15 crowns up on each guy that works, you know.
Yeah.
So there were these four companies they were very, very interested in. And we found out afterwards that they had found us through these companies. And I think two of these companies didn't have, they had withdrawn their F-tax. But two of them still had them, if I remember correctly, when the time for this meeting was.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they'd asked all these questions, and they'd asked things like, what clothes were they wearing when they were working for you? Were they having your logotype on their clothes when they were working there, or did they have their own company's logo on the clothes? And for Mickey, this is, I mean, he knows this because he's very proud of his company. So only the people that really deserve to have our logo will have it, and it's the ones that we have employed. So he could answer that, but they just wouldn't believe that because in their they have these questions that they follow, and in their models of, you know, they have this preconceived idea about what a criminal behavior is. And if you hire other workers and they use your logos, then you are most probably a criminal and you've made some kind of deal with them. Because the thing is about these four companies, they had not paid their taxes.
Right.
And they had not paid the taxes for the work that they had done when they had been working for us. And then, you know, there is this form that you can fill and send to the tax authorities to check and see if they are paying their taxes or not. You know, just to make sure that this is a serious, good, you know, company.
Right.
And we hadn't done that because we didn't know that form existed. But even if we had known it, and we know other companies that have used this form, and then they will just say in court later on that, you know, well, that doesn't really matter. You've only done that to appear to be serious, you know. So it really doesn't matter if you do right and follow the rules, you know, as well as that. It really doesn't matter because if they want to find fault with you, they will.
So it's kind of like if you were to follow all the procedures that they recommend you to do, they reason, well, you do that just for appearance sakes anyway.
Exactly,
so you're guilty, right?
So. Exactly. So I hope people understand this because, I mean, it really took a few years for me to understand what we were accused for also in the end. So, but what we found out afterwards that to go to this meeting, you know, when they just say in advance, you just want to talk a little bit about, you know, your business and stuff like that, you shouldn't go to that meeting because if you do, everything you say and do at that meeting will be used against you.
Right.
But if you don't go to that meeting, then you are suspect, you know, it's then you've got something to hide. And we didn't know anything about this. We hadn't heard of companies that had been accused of what we are going to later be accused of. So anyway, after this, I might go back to this meeting because there were a few more things that they brought up that
sure.
I might be back to. But
yep.
I can't really remember. It was quite a long time. I think this was in February something, this meeting. And by the time summer came, they sent us a letter and said that they hadn't had time to reach some kind of
conclusion.
Yeah, exactly. So I think we waited until after summer, and then we got this huge pile of paper where it basically said that we had a very close and criminal we had just paid these invoices to them and somehow gotten lots of money back from it. because they didn't pay the taxes, and somehow we had made lots of money in this kind of deal with these people. But we had paid the invoices. Everything was in our bookkeepings and in the binders and everything like that, but still. So, but this huge, you know, it's called promemorium in Swedish. I don't know what it's called in English, but in any way where they have come to this conclusion that we are guilty. It's, I think 90% was about these other companies and that they hadn't paid their taxes and that they were criminals. And then they had just drawn their own conclusion with absolutely no evidence, at least no hard facts. It's just, you know, what they have used as, they use this word as presumption.
Right.
Evidence presumption that, you know, it's just, it's their, they jump to conclusions basically. And, you know, this is how they think people do criminal business with each other.
This is a way for them to kind of, they have come up with this formula, a methodology for,
yes,
for like trying to track and find people who are either associated, you know, with those who they deem to be guilty or whatnot. And then, so you guys were basically kind of, you were drawn into this because you happened to just certain parameters on their little model kind of, you know, they could check off a few boxes and it seems like, okay, so that means that you guys have to be guilty and part of this kind of thing, right?
Exactly. It's guilt by association.
Yes. Yes.
They find these companies that are criminal and they know that they, you know, it's evident they haven't paid the taxes and all that, you know, the social taxes, and there's so many words for taxes in Swedish that I don't really know all of them, but
yeah.
But and they know, and they said that we had another meeting with them after this first conclusion that we were criminals in their eyes,
yeah.
where they said openly that these companies that we had hired, it's no use going after them because they don't have any money left, and the owners have, you know, probably gone off to Thailand. They didn't say that, but they said it's no use going after these companies because they don't have any money, but you do.
So that's interesting. So in other words, let's try to go after those who did business with these people because they potentially, as you are then, you're still in Sweden, you know, you have your children there, you're not going to
exactly
leave anytime soon. So let's just harass these people instead.
Exactly.
Wow.
So let me see what they had said then. Yeah, we had when they sent us this their verdict, if you can use that word, can't you?
Yeah, sure.
We had one more meeting with our. We had hired a lawyer at that time. It wasn't a very good one that we hired from the beginning. But it was at that second meeting then where we tried to explain the things that they had accused us of, but they wouldn't listen to it very much at all. So, but we got to at least to we got had time to come with some sort of reply to their accusations. But they wouldn't listen to any of that. So I believe it was in November or no, maybe December. I can't remember, of 2010, they said, we still find you guilty.
That's 3 years ago now then, obviously. So it's been a lot.
Yeah.
This is the long and drawn out process.
Yes, yes, yes.
Bureaucracy works slow. It's like a glacial movement here, just so people can understand
exactly
as well that process in itself is going to be excruciating. But yeah, please go ahead, Lisa.
Yeah. But now they were very much in a hurry because we had about, when we received, you know, their final verdict, you're guilty, we had about, from the day that we found out that they found us guilty, we had 2 weeks to pay 1.2 million, I believe it was.
Wow.
And we haven't even been tried in a court or anything, just because they say now that you're guilty. They didn't have any evidence or anything. They use the word evidence all over this verdict that they have that they sent to you, but they really didn't have any. And that's one of the biggest problems with this, that most companies go bankrupt when this happens, when they say, okay, you've made so much money by doing business with these criminal companies that. And I mean, we hired about 20 companies during that time, and four of them, you know, didn't pay their taxes. So
yeah,
we were very very unlucky.
Let's say, you say 1.5 million Swedish crowns?
No, 1.2 around. You know, if I remember correctly now.
I'm just going to do a quick translation so people know what they're, or exchange here. That's in euros. We're talking about 132,000 euros. And let me just see American dollars here as well, just for our international audience here, you know, so they can get an idea of what we're talking about. $182,254. So, yeah, there we go. So you guys were supposed to pay that back in two weeks' time, is that?
Yeah. Wow. So we went to the bank. We didn't have that money because, I mean, we'd had our company a couple of years and we had had this, you know, this other company that didn't pay our invoices that had gone bankrupt. So, I mean, and we had taken loans to renovate the house in Stockholm that we put into, already put in into to in, into the company. Yeah. So we had to go and take another loan. And they believed in us in the bank, so we had to, as a security, we took a loan on the house that my parents live in.
Yeah.
Because I mean, but by that time I was pretty scared because I had read some books that other companies have written about what can happen. So I was thinking, okay, I knew now that it doesn't really matter if you are guilty or not, you're most probably not going to win anyway.
What kind of literature was this? Was this from other cases in Sweden or?
Yeah, there are a few. I read this book called "När Skatteverket anfaller," translated into something "When the Tax Authorities Attack," written by a man called Elias Melki, and they were quite a bit nastier on him than on us.
Yeah.
So that's real. That's a it's a.
Good,
his case is a nightmare.
Well. Yeah.
I actually, when we weren't too happy with the first our first lawyer, so we contacted him, and we got the lawyer that represented him in court. Really good one.
Yeah. Let's see here if there's anything more you wanted to say. Well, basically, you just gotten the you guys have been said you got to pay in like 2 weeks' time. That's about it. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So and this is where most. When most companies that are attacked by the tax authorities and they have to pay this amount of money, if they can pay, most people do because they know they're not going to win anyway. But if they can't pay, they'll go bankrupt. And in our case, if we didn't have that house that my parents live in, we would have gone bankrupt with our company, but also as private. You know, private persons, because they had also taxed us privately, because in their calculations we would have made so much more money and had taken more. We should have had taken more loan. What's it called?
Yeah, more salary.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they put, you know, more taxes on the company and more taxes on us as private persons.
So they did. They did calculations based on what they thought that you guys not only should have done, but you know what you probably would have done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you guys ever look at these calculations that they presented?
Well, we did, and I mean it's what they estimate, you know, because firstly they don't even know if we are guilty of it or not, and then I don't know how they can make, even if we were guilty, I don't know how they can come up with those sums.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know.
Yeah.
Really. It's
interesting.
So if we didn't have had this house, we would have been, you know, practically owned by the state. We would have had to sell everything we own, our house and everything, and move into some apartment somewhere and, you know, for 5 years live like a rat, basically.
Yeah. That's right.
So, and that was, that made me really scared of, you know, this is the country that I come from that treats, we have an authority, the tax authorities that basically view all company owners as criminals. And it's not a nice place, you know, to be in, and it's not a nice country to live in when you sort of realize that this is what can, you know, I haven't done anything wrong, but I could have lost all my rights, basically.
Yeah.
So, you know, I used to really believe in Sweden, you know, that the pay the taxes, you know, so we can have this welfare state and we can have schools and healthcare and all things like that. But I mean, I wasn't that naive when this happened, because when the swine flu scam, as I call it, it came to Sweden, as most other countries in the world. Yeah. I started questioning very, very much, and I wrote to the authorities, and I did a lot of research, because I found out that our authorities aren't, you know, doing the work that they say that they are doing. They don't really know what they are doing, and I found out that more or less they're representing the big pharma, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I'd done a lot of research about that. So I wasn't really, it was my view, this picture I have of Sweden as being this really, really good country was already.
It began to crumble there at some point.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Began to crumble. That was the word I was looking for.
Yeah. Was that around, because the swine flu scam, that was that also in 2009 or 10?
Yeah. Exactly. So when I was living in Stockholm, I remember I was sitting in front of the computer, and I was reading. My daughter was nine years old then. And I said to my daughter, I don't know what is right and I don't know what is wrong when it comes to this, but they've told me so far that it's not compulsory. You don't have to do it to get vaccinated, even though you could sort of sense that maybe it was going to become compulsory to get that vaccinated. But they are saying to me that if you vaccinate your children and something goes wrong, it's your responsibility. And if you don't and something goes wrong, it's still your responsibility. So I told my family that, you know, let's do some research. And I remember the day when I was reading to my daughter something, I can't really remember what it was. And when I had stopped reading, I looked up at my daughter and she looked at me, and we just said, at the same time, we're not going to get vaccinated. You know, yeah. Now we know enough.
Right.
This is not right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's that was sort of the beginning of my reawakening. You know, because I mean, I've lived abroad. I knew that Sweden wasn't the country that Sweden would like to have others believe. You know,
right.
I still thought that Sweden was, you know, overall quite good anyway, you know,
and the comfort and the safety of the folkhemmet you thought that was something to be proud of at the time, but this began to kind of waver a little bit, and of course as a consequence of all the things that you've been involved in, it's your view and your experience of all this has completely changed consequently.
Oh yes, it has Oh dear, and that's also been it's been a grieving process as well, because it's sort of, you have to take it all in small doses when it's been generations of we've been fooled, so you can't take it in all at the same time. And,
it's a lot, isn't it? Because you're right. I mean, it's, and I think that's something that's. It's a burden, if you will, almost on those people or those generations who choose to look and examine at this, because you're right. I mean, this has been a multi-generational process where the Swedes have been kind of in this cocoon, if you will, and it's a harsh reality, if you will, to wake up to, and there's a lot of people who you know, lived and have come and gone, if you will, in Sweden, that never have gotten this awakening or realization of what it actually, what they're part of, what they're living in, you know?
No. And I mean, most people know that the state isn't perfect, and that, you know, but still they look up to it and they believe in it. And anyway, even though people aren't getting healthier and people, you know, it's like the Swedish education system, it's like the world is competing about creating the worst education system, you know, that can be found.
Yep.
And Sweden is just, you know, if I compare what I knew and what children know today, it's quite a big difference. I'd say, you know, it's not getting better. It really isn't.
No.
And but still, you know, And it's the same for me. I really I don't believe very much in anything of it anymore. And it's not just Sweden; it's the whole world. It's sort of like the whole world is hijacked. But Sweden is has got its ups and downs and its peculiarities.
I would say it's a special flavor to it because it has still managed to attain a kind of a certain mystifying aura around it. That other countries are still kind of, they're looking up to it and they think still at this very, you know, protected society and that things are generally very, very well, you know, and then the harsh reality is quite something different. And of course, certainly we can talk more about that in detail and examine some of those aspects later as well, Lisa. But tell us, let's go back a little bit more and see what happened and how your situation kind of evolved from where we left off there, if you will.
Yeah. Well, we appealed, of course. It's also very funny to, or not so funny, but what people think of you in all this, when other people around you, as the media has these programs, as we are in the construction business, and we have programs that are called Big Fusk, translated like a construction
scams.
Yeah, exactly. And every company owner is, you know, probably a criminal in most people's eyes, and anyway, that aren't company owners themselves. So,
sorry to interrupt, Lisa, but would you say that is that a, I guess what I'd like to ask you from your experience, the smaller business owner in Sweden, are they viewed somehow differently, let's say, than these, you know, mega companies, the monopolies in Sweden that are pretty much, you know, in they're working in conjunction these days with the state, you know, the corporatist society that we have. But is the smaller business owner kind of viewed in a different light, would you say?
Not really, because they always say, you know, that all company owners are evil, and they understand that of course these small family companies is not the same thing as these huge corporations that will corrupt the governments and all that. But they are all viewed the same. We are all hiding away our taxes somewhere and doing a business under the table, and we're. Most of us are criminals in any case, and during this period as well, many people, even, you know, close friends and relatives, would you know, sort of hint that, you know, no smoke without fire, you know.
Really, yeah.
And all that. So it's and I think that was, that part was most tough for my parents, because they, I mean, by this time, my husband and I were really, you know, we didn't really care about what other people were going to say about this. But my parents really, you know, it's their generation, sort of, they care about what other people think. So anyway, we appealed, and we got the money back, actually, that we had paid in. We don't really know why, because most people don't get the money back, but we did. And I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. Maybe it's a bad thing, because now that we had eventually won, we would have gotten some renta.
Interest rate, you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, we appealed, and we went to court. And what I've found out is that the courts usually, especially in the first instance, they will just, you know, if the tax authorities say that you're guilty, they will just listen to that, and they won't really look at the evidence and stuff like that. So we lost, and I was quite surprised, because when we sat there, I could so clearly see that they didn't have any evidence that they put forth, you know. But anyway, apparently the court and the judge thought that we were guilty. So we lost that case, and then we had to pay in the money all again, all over again.
Wow.
And we appealed, and we got the money back. So then there was, this was 2012 when we lost, and it was just after Midsummer celebration here in Sweden, that we got the verdict, as you call that. Yeah. So and another thing in all this, the insecurity of all this, and the stress that follows, and to run a company and to pay the lawyer and to there's so many things that people don't understand being in a situation like this. It's like being you can't begin to you just can't get on with your life because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if you're gonna lose. You don't know if you're gonna lose so much money that you can't go on. And this worry all the time is really, really stressful.
Everything grinds to a halt and you can't basically live your life as you were supposed to in that regard and you know, move forward, advance or, you know, do something for your children or anything like that. But because everything needs to be, they put your life on the pause button is pushed and that's it. And you have to just be on hold and standby to serve, you know, the authorities when they will, you know, from you.
Yeah. And the other thing is as well that basically the tax authorities say to you that you're guilty, prove you're not.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
We had to prove that we were not guilty. And, you know, that's a lot more difficult than most people think, that, you know, how can I prove that I haven't been doing this business, you know, this dirty business with these companies? How can I prove that, you know? It's really, really difficult because, I mean, basically what they really wanted us to do was to find witnesses that would say, you know, I'm the one that I basically had to find the company owners that had disappeared and make them come and witness, because during the first court hearing, we had witnesses that told the judges that, you know, we got money, yes, under the table, but not from Lisa and Mickey and their company. We got it from someone else. But they wouldn't name the someone else because, I mean, you know, in that world, they know that they're going to get, you know, they just don't do that. But
yeah,
because they didn't do that, that wasn't evidence enough. So basically, our witnesses weren't credible. They basically said that, you know, we'd talked to them before, that, you know, of course we have. I mean, our lawyer had spoken to them before the court hearing.
Yeah.
So they basically said that our witnesses were lying and nothing that we said was correct. But the thing was also that it's kind of strange that they had they have something called skattetillägg. It's a kind of additional tax in Sweden that they impose on a person during these tax cases. And to impose that tax, you have to have evidence. So they removed that. But from the rest, we had to prove that we were innocent. So
right.
To the rest, we were guilty. So basically, you know, the judge has said that there is no evidence, but you are guilty of this, but not of that. But, you know, so it's really, it makes no sense. And that's also very, very dangerous in a society, that if you follow, I mean, people should know what's right and wrong. People should know what the rules are. People should understand that and have time to know how to run a business and what is what and what is not.
Right. Yeah.
But they can't really, you know, how are we supposed to run a business in the construction world, and at the same time we have to know all these rules and
the burden
prepare for it, you
well,
know,
exactly.
You and know that you can be accused of this. So I believe that they want to scare people so much that we're supposed to be so scared of being attacked by the tax authorities that we basically just live in fear all the time and be so scared of doing anything wrong and step out of line. But I mean, that's... What kind of a society is that, really?
Well, exactly, and just the premise that you, as a, you know, a business owner, have to have, you must vet everyone that you're working in and look for their credibility. And it's like,
yeah,
they are asking you to do the job that in this regard they are supposed to do. It's like the police walking in on a murder investigation and saying, you know, you showed up to help the victim, and they say, well, we found you here on the site, so I guess you're the guilty one, right? But now you have to go out and do the investigation and prove to us that you're not guilty.
Yeah. Exactly. We pay our authorities to do us a favor. That's why they're called public servants. But we have to do their work, and we have to pay their wages as well. And when we have done their work, they will send an invoice anyway. So it's like, you know, it's in many cases, it is like that, really. And it's really absurd. And I can understand that, you know, as a company owner, I have to have my papers in order. I have to have the bookings in order and everything. And they can't really ask more for that. Of course, if they had called us and we said, you know, we don't have anything left, of course, that would be very suspicious, because you're obliged to keep the bookings so they can do these controls. But we had, and you know, it's so funny because, or scary, I don't know what word to use. You know, this first meeting that my husband and Karin went to, when he didn't remember a surname of one of these guys that was employed by one of these companies that didn't pay their taxes. And one of these guys we later employed in our company. And so his name was in all our papers, his surname. But because Micke didn't remember that person's surname during that meeting, that was in their view, that was evidence. But I mean,
right,
it's not what would my husband have to gain or not gain by not mentioning a surname that is in all our papers?
Right.
I mean, it's so absurd. And also because my husband, I mean, he's not intimidated easily, but he was really, really he was really intimidated by that first meeting. And when we have these, when we reply to the accusations to and forth all the time, Micke, my husband, had said that, you know, I couldn't possibly be prepared for what you were going to talk about. You know, it's just one thing to talk about the company and stuff like that. It's a totally different thing to be accused of criminal behavior that the other companies have committed.
Sure. Well, that's
so happening. And also then they responded to that. I mean, didn't you know that you were going to talk about your company? I mean, that was their, of course we knew that. We're not idiots, you know, but we didn't know that we were going to be accused of other people's criminal behavior.
Exactly.
That was quite some. And when it dawned on him, because Karin, she understood before Micke what they were looking for, what they were, you know, where they were heading.
Right.
But it took a while for Micke. But when he realized it, he got a shock. He really got a shock.
Yeah.
And he couldn't even speak afterwards. He was so
intimidated, was, upset about
very,
this.
Very, very, very upset. Yeah.
Yeah. So how was your, and there's many more components to this and the more stuff I want to ask you about here, but how was your experience overall in court as well? You mentioned a little bit about this to me, and the idea that you're kind of standing on your own, but it's really two major authorities, the law and the tax office, against you guys.
Yeah.
How was that experience?
Exactly. Yeah, that was really, really strange, because during the first court hearing, the tax authorities acted as if, you know, because they are, they act as persecutors and tax collectors and executioners, you know, all in one.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
And so when we came in there, I thought that, you know, we were going to be judged as two equal parts. But, you know, they work, the courts work for the state and the tax authorities work for the state. And
oh,
then
no, no, they're independent, see?
Well, yes, that's what they say. But, you know, they've DNV, the Nya Välfärden, that I spoke to you about, this organization that works for the companies in Sweden, you can say.
It's kind and of they, like, they, just to explain that, it's kind of like an organization that's there to, you know, protect a little bit in terms of like small business owners. They're being called like a think tank, if you will, but for, you know, for the business world, pretty much, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they've made some research about this, and they've come to the conclusion that when the courts do a good job and really examine the evidence, the companies win. But when they don't do a good job, they just take the tax authority's word as truth.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's and I've heard even from Karin that does our bookkeepings, when she goes to get educated in these areas, she's spoken to the judges that say, you know, this isn't really difficult, because I mean, we of course we trust the tax authorities. Of course they are right. If they say that someone is a criminal, then we have to believe them, you know. So they don't really do their work, and that's also a very, very you're not equal before the law.
No,
you're not treated as equal. It's you know, it is a fact. They work for the state, and it's not supposed to be like that. And of course, some people win. We eventually won, but it's more like a lottery. People sometimes have to win, but and that's also what makes it very, very scary. That I've read so many verdicts, and you can't really say that if they are, there's no evidence to say that they are guilty or not. So it's like, and even now, the tax authorities and the Swedish court system has, there've been these verdicts from EU and from the highest court, what do you call it?
The Supreme Court, whatever. Yeah, that would be equivalent. Yeah.
They sort of say that, you know, you can't do it this way. You have to have more evidence. But still, the tax authorities say, well, we have a different view on this. So they basically just do what they want to do anyway. But it's become a bit better since there's, I think, 4 verdicts that came in 2012, after we had lost the first round.
Right.
That helped us probably in the second.
How many, when you guys appealed, did it go to like a higher up, you know, court each time, right?
Yeah.
So were you at the equivalent of our Supreme Court? What level were you at? It's funny to say that.
Well, it's 2 court systems in Sweden, as I understand it. One is where people have.
Is it tingsrätt, which is one of them, right?
Yeah, when someone has it's between the authorities and the people, and the other court is if it's, you know, two equal people or persons that have, you know, if you've murdered someone or something like that. But this is the court that we were in. It's sort of cases that are between social services. If you take someone's children, that they say that, you know, they're not a good enough parent, then you go to that court.
Oh, okay. There's much more to talk about and much more I want to ask you about here as we proceed. But are there any, I don't know if you intend to write anything on this. I know that you have already, Lisa, mm-hmm. you've written some stuff on this, but are there any website or anything like that you'd like to give out or other sources to some of the things that you've been talking about that you'd like to mention?
Well, not at the moment. No, we'll talk about that later, because I'll you know, I've got some more work to do with all this, and I'm writing in Swedish anyway, so maybe I'll be able to translate it to English one day, but it's not, you know, ready in a long while anyway, because it's, you know, this process has, you know, shrunk my brain and everything, so it takes time to put all these pieces together. So not at the moment, but if someone wants to contact me, you know, they can contact you.
Definitely. Okay, very good. Let's take a short break here, Lisa. We'll be right back with more, so stay with us.